Hey, this is Daniel. Thanks for listening to DIY Money. If you haven't already, be sure to give us a 5-star review on iTunes so your friends know that they can learn from the show. Also, follow us everywhere on social at DIY Money Podcast. If you haven't already, be sure to check out the video on YouTube. We've got some awesome bonus content there. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to another edition of DIY Money.
DIY Money.
Daniel, obviously, there's a lot going on in the world, but the hot button, the talk, the subject matter is all around inflation.
Inflation.
8.5% trailing 12-month inflation.
It's a little up.
Yeah. Holy cow. Now, here's the interesting thing, a couple nuances about that, as you know. One of the stickiest components that has driven up the CPI since COVID has been used autos, which was actually down, interestingly enough.
Down
3.5%. Pretty decent drop. I think it perpetuates, is what I'm hearing from my car guru friends. Obviously, oil, energy, airlines, food, you know, everything else that really matters.
Airline prices are up, or ticket prices are
huge,
up.
Huge, huge ticket. And the demand, American Airlines just blew it all out of the park.
They can set the price whatever they want. People want to travel.
Hit it out of their park.
This is your captain speaking. We've arrived in Los Angeles. Not exactly Kennedy Airport, but we did land 3 hours ahead of schedule.
But the reason I bring that up is you were astute to send us very quickly the revision of the I-bonds.
Yeah, looking at the next six-month rate. So for a refresher for people who missed our I-bond episode quite a while back, I think we did an episode where we talked about
that. Because now all of a sudden, I-bonds are all cool.
They are, for about the next 6 to 12 months.
And I just want to say, they're like, hey, have you heard of this? Can we buy some of this in our account? I'm like, no, we can't, but you can buy it on your own. Here's a link.
There's an article on our website.
Yep, article on our website.
So, yeah, the calculation sets the forward rate, which was going to update May 1st. So anything you buy May 1st forward. Or if you hold them whenever your anniversary date is, so they change on your six-month anniversary dates, the rate is going to update to 9.61% is what we're going to look at for the forward six-month annualized rate. Mm. So take half of that, and that's what you get for those particular 6 months. But right now, the rate is 7.12. So, I mean, if you just add those together, divide by two, you're looking at roughly, what is that, 8.4, 8.5, roughly for a 12-month, no risk return?
Daniel, you had me at 7.
Mm. Clearly.
You can go to 8, 9, all you want. You had me at 7. Some nuances, though, just so people don't have to rehash this all. You put the max is $10,000 per person per year. And pro tip for those of you not all tech-savvy like Daniel, because treasurydirect.gov is not the easiest site to
it's like the 90s.
Maneuver. I've never seen a password virtual keyboard that pops up.
Yeah, they're working on the site, they say. They're working on it.
Come
government
on.
Speed.
No, it'll be done in 2027.
Did you see there's a proposal to increase the limit to $100,000 per year?
That would be huge.
Massive.
But, no, I didn't see that. Wonderful. But pro tip, instead of opening two separate accounts, which I started to do back in December for my wife and I, it was, again, just the process of doing it. I ended up just buying hers as a gift under my account. So both my wife's and mine are gifts under my account, and I'll be subsequently doing that for my children this year.
How does she cash hers out then?
Same thing. You just cash it out. I don't know. Who knows? I haven't thought that far down the path. I mean, just
give can't
the,
cash it out into
give
your
me
account.
7%. I have no idea. Literally, I have no clue.
It's all
good. Once you log in and you're done with the process, it's very difficult. It's a good thing it's not a. Maybe investment accounts should be that way. Maybe if it was very difficult to jump into your Robinhood account, you wouldn't trade so much and make dumb mistakes.
Yeah, to be clear, it's not a money market account. It's not something that you throw cash in, try to take cash out. It's a place that you store some funds for the future. They're inflation protected. Because the interest rate updates to keep in line with inflation, though the total realized rate can't go below zero. So if we're in a deflationary environment,
it's great.
You're not going to get the negative side. So actually, truly, in the long run, they will outperform inflation because inflation inherently in the world, in real world, has both inflation and deflation.
Yep.
And because these are effectively capped at a zero or floored at a 0% rate, you'll do slightly better than inflation over the long run.
But again, you know, you're capped on how much you can put in. We put in a good chunk of our emergency fund. You know, it is what it is. Anyways, I brought that up for two reasons. One, so you could give an update on the I-bond rate, which I think is important. The other thing, and I haven't yet taken this to the tribe via the video, but I'll tell you, I don't care how much, you know, your income level is. I don't care your, you know, wealth status or whatever it may be. If you are money conscious, you are seeing the vast difference in the prices that you're paying. And I know, personally speaking, I have never been so focused and detail-oriented around our budget as I am now. And I just think that, you know, if you've not ever before taken us serious when it comes to tracking expenses, developing a budget, trying to find margin, this is the time to do it. It's never too late. But I also will say, this is why. This is the environment, and precisely why, when we were talking about the coming challenges and whatever it may be, the answer to the coming challenges, in my opinion, has always been pay down debt. Because if you can remove fixed payments, then you have the ability, or at least you have a better ability, to absorb price changes on your variable expenses. If you have fixed payments and you are living paycheck to paycheck, the minute those variable expenses expand, something's going to break. And unfortunately, we're seeing that a lot out there. That is going to lead, I'll tell you, ultimately, if the economics behind it stay true, to a difficult economic environment. For those of you that are savers out there and been waiting patiently to purchase a home, I do believe it will lead to lower real estate prices. We're already starting to see that. I'm seeing memes of, not memes, I guess they're turning into memes, but snapshots of Zillow where people are you know, dropping prices in hot areas by $100,000, $150,000 here.
Well, they're getting a little aggressive on the list prices.
They were getting a little aggressive on the list prices, but nonetheless, it should transpire. So anyways, just a brief update there. Nothing else really going on. Let's go right to a question today because we've got a couple good ones. And of course, I do not recall the name of our listener or our question. And Jordan, there we go. Logan's on the ball. So Jordan, what do you got?
DIY.
Hi, Quint and Daniel. This is Jordan calling. Love you guys' podcast. Thank you for all the great content at DIY Money. My question for you today is, my wife had taught for 5 years and is now back at school getting a degree in data science. We had $40,000 that we had saved up for a down payment on a house, and we decided to put that towards her education instead. She's got 1 year down, and we've used about $20,000 of that, mostly towards school, and we have another year to go. That will cost about another $20,000. We do have an emergency fund of $10,000, and we have about $175,000 of retirement account money, and we have no debt. The question for you is, what is the best way to pay for that last $20,000 of her schooling? Should we use cash that we had saved for the home, or should we use our 457 account money that she now has access to without any penalties, just taxes that we'll have to pay on that, or student loans, something to keep the cash liquid. So if we do want to buy a house a year from now, we'll have at least, you know, the $20,000 on hand for that. Curious as to your thoughts. I appreciate all you guys do.
Okay. First thought, Jordan, and admittedly, I probably should have sent you a quick email and said, hey, give me an idea of income and therefore how long it took you to save the $40,000. So first of all, some accolades, give you a couple fanny pats here. Bravo job on following DIY money steps, getting yourself into a situation where you've got an emergency fund, you've saved, you know, you were saving for a down payment, you're very focused on your goals, your objectives, et cetera. I'm guessing you're renting because there was no mention about selling a house and unlocking and moving or anything like that. So my guess is you're renting. Now, I'm going to take a couple of... I'm gonna make some assumptions, and then I'm gonna give you kind of a couple of different thoughts. So one assumption is that obviously your wife has stopped working and is, you know, going to school, and it doesn't sound like you're adding any debt on that. So I'm assuming your income is sufficient to provide for the monthly expenses that you all have. Now, when your wife leaves school and gets a job, I'm also going to assume that you did this, you made this $40,000 investment so that she would have the ability to make more money. So I'm going to assume that there's an ROI on the $40,000. The fact that you have the ability now to live off of one income in the situation that you're at, and in the future, basically bank the entirety of your wife's income, I personally think that you aren't going to be in a situation where you lose much ground over the next year if you just pay for the education and you stay completely debt-free. I mean, whatever she's making coming out, let's say less taxes, I don't know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, I have no idea. And in 1 year, you're able to bank less taxes, another, you know, $35,000, $40,000. You'll be able to replenish that amount very, very quickly. Odds are, right now, you're not going to buy a house over the next year anyways. Why? You're living on one income. So, you know, whether you keep that $20,000 aside or not, in the next year, as she goes to school, it doesn't sound like you're going to be, you know, putting that down on a house. You know, I don't know. Maybe if the right deal came along. So I think in this situation, I personally like the idea of remaining debt-free, getting out, you know, once she gets a job and gets out, maybe she has to move. Maybe you have to move for this job. Maybe it's a different, I don't know. There's too many variables there on the, I'm leaving school and I'm getting another job, et cetera, front that I don't like, by incurring new debt. Now, you know, again, fast forward a year after she gets out, if you're able to continue to live off of your income, take all that money. Now you're 2 years out. I know it's not probably what you wanted. You wanted to buy a house sooner than that. I'm going to tell you, you'll be in a much better position. My personal opinion, this is not investment advice, but I think you'll be in a much better position to buy a home that's probably come down in price. You'll have that down payment back. You'll have never gone into debt. And if there's any sort of economic shock between now and then, she gets out, can't find a job, et cetera, you have no debt. You're in the driver's seat. So I think I'm going to err on the no debt side here. Pay for it and just continue on the path that you're on. What say you, Daniel?
Yeah, definitely the 457 tapping retirement accounts is a no-go for me. One, because you take the tax hit, but two, you'll never get later on in life and go, man, I'm really glad we tapped our retirement fund. Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's some listeners to the show who, like, in
I've
hindsight,
I've never heard
like,
anybody say no. that.
But just because retirement savings is tough enough as it is, to some extent, I mean, it's not tough. You know, you automate it, set it, forget it, do it. But like saving for that large of a goal. I mean, keep in mind, most people are planning for a 30-year retirement horizon. So planning for a goal that large is really big. So anytime you create headwinds for that goal, just doesn't make sense. Now, there have been times in our personal financial journey as a family where we have taken on debt to maintain liquidity, whether it was car purchases. We actually did it with student loans for my degree. We had the cash available to kind of cash flow it, but we kind of wanted to keep liquidity, and that actually gave us some flexibility in the great financial crisis and so forth. So during some periods or in some situations, I could see a need for that. It sounds like there's some flexibility here with maybe potentially being able to rent longer or have some flexibility with home stuff. it's $20,000, which is a large sum, but I think if you didn't have that debt and you got some hustle after the fact, that you could replace that in pretty short order. So, yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think if you could do it the no-debt way, try to do it the no-debt way, as long as you can maintain that kind of emergency savings, stay flexible, not have to worry about it, and it's going to be a lot easier when, I mean, not a lot easier, but it's one extra arrow in your quiver. When you go to apply for a mortgage, having less debt is generally always better.
Yeah, and again, I think we're not in a stage right now where acting in haste to buy real estate, you're not doing that because there's these unbelievable deals. People are doing that out of this fear of missing out, FOMO. And FOMO rarely leads to wise investment decisions in the future. It just doesn't. So I personally believe, and I know, look, it hasn't happened in a few years, and people might think this is just foolish, but I personally believe people who are bidding up and paying ridiculous prices that you know, are out of the normal average appreciation rate for a home are gonna get burned. I mean, they're gonna come back and look and go, man, that wasn't the smartest financial decision. A lot of times, I just think people underestimate. We'll actually talk about this in the next podcast. I think people underestimate the expenses that actually go into home ownership. I think that's a rude awakening a lot of times when people go in. They factor in their mortgage, their principal, their interest, taxes, and then they maybe think about, well, you've got some expenses here and there. I'm on my third attempt to fix our septic system.
Cool.
Yeah, and every time it's a $500 thing. I mean, it's just like, oh, yeah, you know, I came out and looked at it, $500. No, I mean, obviously I'm being a little hyperbolic, but it's expensive. It's expensive to own a home. So anyways, we got off a little track there. But I think in summary, both Daniel and I agree that in this situation, I don't see a great advantage keeping the liquidity. If you've got an emergency fund, which you do, it's not this $20,000. Pay for the school, invest in it, and then when your wife gets out, bank that money and then use that to buy a home. I think you'll be in great shape if you do that. All right, Jordan, great question. Thanks so much for sending that along. We will send you a $25 Amazon gift card. A couple of caveats. Love the questions that are coming in. Please keep sending those audio questions. However, and some of you, your questions are so darn good, I'm going to reach back out and say, hey, can you shorten this a little bit? One of the great attributes you all seem to like of the show is the length. You know, we keep it relatively short, and we do that on purpose. Of course, there's still debate about whether you like the bro talk or not. Who knows? But whatever. We're not going to cut that. But if you have a question, please keep it within the minute range. Anything over that gets a little long, and it just drags on a little bit. So keep it within the minute range, and odds are you'll find yourself on the show. So again, thanks so much, Jordan, for that question. Remember, friends, the secret to wealth is pretty darn simple. Live on less than you make. Invest the rest. Do so for a very long time. Make it a great one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the show. If you want content delivered to you regularly, be sure to follow us on Instagram at DIY.money. And if you want your question aired on the show, be sure to send that to us and you'll get a $25 Amazon gift card.
This show is for entertainment and educational purposes only and is not intended as personal financial advice. Before making any financial decision, please do your homework and consult a financial advisor as needed.